Welcome to Fate's Wide Wheel, a Quantum Leap podcast with Sam and Dennis. We are coming to you from our top secret headquarters at Project Quantum Leap, but you can find us online at fwwquantumleappod.com or follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Fate's Wide Wheel. And please do us a favor by hitting the subscribe button on iTunes. Hello, everybody. We are back for another podcast of Fate's Wide Wheel. Of course, I am Sam, and this is...
I'm Dennis. Hello.
And we are also joined by our special guest, Claire Feeney.
Hi.
We are going to talk about How the Tess Was Won, which was written by Deborah Arakalian and directed by Ivan Dixon. It aired on April 14th, 1989. The leap date is August 5th through the 7th, 1956. And Sam has leapt into Daniel Doc Young, a veterinarian in Texas. So as we talked about on the last episode, Ziggy didn't necessarily get it wrong, just got the wrong leap. Because now here we have Sam in Texas in the 50s, not a farmer, but a veterinarian, and he has leapt into a pigsty holding up a tiny pig.
Yeah, what's the TV Guide synopsis for this one?
Yeah, the TV Guide synopsis is, as a cowboy veterinarian, Sam must keep destiny on course by breaking an ornery cowgirl who pledges to marry him if he can prove he's a better cowpoke than she. Let me just go back real quick. By breaking an ornery cowgirl.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that.
Yeah. So, yeah, as I was watching this episode...
There's some issues.
Yes. So, I was watching this episode. My wife, Betsy, was sitting on the couch with me. And I just kind of looked over out of the corner of my eye. And she physically bristled. She was like...
Oh, yeah.
And she was... I wrote it down, actually. She's like, that triggers a few feminist sensibilities in me.
Oh, so many.
When I read that to her.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah. Well, hell, let's just dive right in.
So, episode written by a woman.
Yes.
So we're going to start with that. Good job, 80s television. Thank you.
Absolutely. So to jump back to a lot of what we talked about in the last episode about them leaning heavy into the God thing, the opening narration for this, aside from Sam talking about after the theme song, like he kind of like sums up the plot of the previous episode going into this one, as he leaps into this one, his voiceover narration says, but as the Bible says,
yes,
the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away.
Yes.
Which we talk about like leaning into the God thing. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, so now we're in a pigsty on this farm.
Pigsty on a farm.
Oh, that pig, though. So cute. So cute. The whole time. I just, every time the pig comes up, I just squeed a little bit. I'm like, it's the cutest pig!
Well, and you know, this episode, actually, it's funny because for as much as we're going to dig deep onto some of the things that the episode does, one of the things that I find interesting that's very superficial is that some of the iconic images of the show, and mostly because of the intro that gets done later, are taken from this episode. Mm-hmm. One at the beginning and one at the end are really two of the more iconic images in the show just by virtue of the fact that they were used again and again and again.
And one in the middle, too, which I think we'll get to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Right. That's right. So anyway, so there we have that superficial bit. Let's dive deep. And generally we do kind of a synopsis and go scene by scene. This episode, I'm just going to say right off the bat, we could definitely do that. And we'll probably touch on the scene by scene aspects. I don't feel we need to. It's fairly straightforward, you know?
It's pretty straightforward, yeah. What I find interesting at the start of this episode is almost immediately after we see the situation that Sam is in, like, he's in a pigsty, he's covered with mud, he's holding up a baby pig.
It's not just mud.
Yeah. Fair point. Almost immediately, it cuts away from him, and we're introduced to Chance.
And Tess.
And what I love about this episode is that in the first 3 minutes, we know exactly what this episode is about.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
As compared to the last episode.
And what the plot of the episode is. Yeah. And like going back to the thing we talked about in the previous episode, like this show was originally conceived as an anthology series, and Sam and Al were just basically vehicles, like characters to bring viewers back every week. And like this is one, like as soon as we we see where Sam is at, and now we're going to cut away. We're going to tell you about these people over here.
Well, and you know, the other thing, the framework of the episodes and some of the tropes that they covered, you know, again, are a little superficial at times, but it's like, you know, with the last episode, we had the boxing episode, you know, mm-hmm. right down to the fact that you've got religion involved, you've got the training montage.
The montage, yes.
It feels very much like a boxing episode. This is like your cowboy romance episode,
very
you know?
Much,
yep,
yeah.
This is, yeah.
Just so happens that it's, and this is no offense to any of our listeners from the great state of Texas or any of my great Texan friends, but we wind up in sexist Texas.
There we go. It's a nice
You know, and later episodes this season will also continue that trend, I think, of exploring specific kind of, you know, types of settings, and this one just happens to be our cowboy western romance
yeah.
sort of thing.
So basically the first few minutes we get set up with the plot is that Chance really wants Tess to get married,
mm-hmm.
but she doesn't feel like any of the men on the Riata are up to snuff.
Yeah.
And so she throws out the thing, if any man can out cowboy me, I will marry him. And there's this one moment, she's like, do you want me to marry this guy, Zeke?
Yeah.
And we cut over this guy for some inexplicable reason. He's in slow motion looking up from and Betsy, my wife, pointed out, like, he's like standing like squarely in between two horses' asses. And it's like the slow motion shot. He's got the big cowboy mustache.
No, not Zeke.
No. Or Wayne. We're introduced to him.
Wayne.
It's interesting, note the actress who plays Tess is her name is Carrie Leiser.
Mm-hmm. That is correct.
And she went on to be, if not the creator, she was one of the executive producers of Will and Grace.
That is indeed correct.
No way.
So I'm sure she is doing very well right now, assuming that she is part of the Will and Grace reboot. Not reboot, but reunion series.
If not, residuals, man.
Yeah,
residuals,
right.
Yes. Whatever that.
Yeah, I don't see her listed on. I just took a quick look at IMDb. I don't see her listed for the new show, but it could just be that they don't have that up yet. I don't know
for sure.
She actually, oddly enough, she was also an actor in the show. She played the character of Connie, so she was in about 6 or 7 episodes of the show as well as being a producer.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
and it's also interesting to note Tess, not in any way at all her physical appearance, but her demeanor, her tomboyishness. And the quality of her voice, she very much reminds me of a girl I had a crush on all through high school.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You know where I know her from?
Mm.
Matlock. That's insane.
She was
in a season of Matlock. Yeah, I'll be darned.
I probably caught her on some rerun.
Anyway.
on some rerun.
Look, in my household, you watched Matlock, you watched Perry Mason movies, and you watched Murder, She Wrote.
Absolutely.
I mean,
when I was younger, that was probably in high school at the time, there was a local affiliate somewhere around my tri-state area, because I grew up in southern Illinois, like very close to the borders of Indiana and Kentucky.
Oh, yeah.
There was a commercial that I get the feeling it just aired locally. Like, this is not something you would have seen on a national level. The commercial was just this old man sitting in a rocking chair, looking really grumpy, just rocking back and forth, and it keeps cutting to this.
So, like you in 30 years.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Got it.
It keeps creeping up on 4 o'clock on this clock, and it finally hits 4 o'clock, and the guy leans forward. He goes, "Matlock."
Wow.
And that was the commercial for Matlock in my.
And indicative of their entire audience.
And my,
pretty much.
Sam.
Yeah. No, it wasn't me.
No,
okay. It was, you know, it was the family.
Absolutely.
So let's, you know, real quick, since we are talking about the other actors, Lance LeGault, who plays Chance,
yes.
Actually had quite the career in Hollywood. Did
all over the place.
Yeah. And was in no less than 4 Elvis Presley movies. He was, which is funny because before the taping began, we were talking some music stuff and we actually were talking a little bit about Elvis. But yeah, he was in Girls, 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 Kissin' Cousins, Viva Las Vegas, and Roustabout. He was also in a number of television programs, The A-Team, Magnum P.I., Wonder Woman, Gunsmoke, Battlestar Galactica, etc. So he had quite the career, you know, before this episode ever came along. And then I have to mention, just because as a kid, not only were we watching Matlock, Perry Mason, and Murder, She Wrote, but my grandfather, who let me misspend my youth many a night renting videos from the video store, and one of my favorite videos as a child, and I know I shouldn't have been watching this as a child, was indeed the film Roadhouse. And Roadhouse...
Roadhouse is awesome.
As one of the antagonists starred Marshall R. Teague, who plays Wayne... And Wayne was Jimmy Reno in Roadhouse.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah. I'm hitting myself
for not making that connection.
I will see your Roadhouse, and I will tell you that when I was a kid, my dad did not care what was on TV around us kids. I will see your Roadhouse, and I will raise you a Porky's.
I saw
Porky's when I was way too young.
I mean, to be fair,
talking about a lack of feminism in 80s media.
Joke. Well. thank you for bringing us on topic.
So speaking of chance, we're introduced to the idea that, so if any man on the farm can out cowboy Tess, she will marry him, but she says, I get to pick, and she looks around, and at this point, just conveniently, Sam is struggling to contain the baby piglet, and so she comes over, and she's like, I pick Doc.
Yeah.
And at first, Chance protests, she's like, you said I could pick any man, and that's the man I pick, and so he goes over... And very matter-of-factly, he throws out, like, hey, are you up for it?
Yeah.
You know, our cowboy and whatever. And Sam's like, you got to be joking.
And he
throws out this line, this is Texas, son. We don't joke about our land, women, or our livestock. And at this point, Betsy shouted out, property!
Yeah.
Those are all property!
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that she feels like she has to make this... consolation at all, like, just to be like, oh, fine, I will pick one of these guys if they're better at doing all of these things than me. No, why can't she just run the ranch herself? Like, I don't understand.
Well,
I mean, I guess this is 56 Texas, and even, you know, 2017 Texas, women might have some issues with that, with their fathers, but I hope not, ladies, run your ranches. but 56 Texas for sure. But no, like, why?
Yeah.
Why?
I'm really glad you said that, and for a couple of reasons, because I think that it is important, and one of the things that we are trying to do, in spite of having our 2017 lens, and both of us admittedly being fairly liberal and you know, not necessarily agreeing with some of the things that happened in this episode, or other episodes for that matter, it is important to us, and I think hopefully to the listenership, that we try to place these episodes in the context of their time.
Time and place fully. I mean, not only is it 56, it's 89.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, not a whole lot of great strides even then.
No, I mean, we're talking about a time period where, like let's look at, you know, and I mean, the term gets thrown around so much these days, so I hesitate to even use it, but let's take a look at strong female characters, and let's think about, at that particular point in time, a strong female character you had was somebody like Murphy Brown, and think about how Murphy Brown and Candace Bergen and that show got damn near, like, you know, I mean, the show... It was a little bit after that when these events happened, but I think the show started airing in like 89 or 90, somewhere around.
Bush, the first presidency.
Yeah. So it was somewhere in between.
Was a love interest of Murphy.
That's right. So this isn't entirely a tangent. It's interesting to think that here we have this great example of a strong female character in the, you know, early 90s, we'll say, and got derided so much for the choices that were being made about the character, in particular the pregnancy and the single motherhood and all that sort of stuff, which again does come a little bit after this episode aired. That being said, here we are with a character who I think the writers and the production team could have probably identified as being the strong female character.
Oh, totally.
And yet, one of the first things that comes out of her mouth is how she doesn't want to act like a woman.
Yeah.
And it's like, why is it that acting like a woman has to be contrary to riding a horse, to doing all of these things that would make her a strong rancher? And that's where all of a sudden it starts to fall apart for me. Mm-hmm. From my point of view, it's like, all right, sure, maybe she's a strong female character, but you just said that she doesn't want to be like a woman. So now really, what is she?
Right.
So that was definitely one, and that happens like in that very first scene. Uh-huh. You know, she says that line about not wanting to act like a woman, and it's like, okay, well, where do we go from here then?
Well, this is where we go. we go to Doc's place, because we have this moment where, because Sam is kind of stuttering over himself, the ranchers think that the entire herd, if that's the right word, sty of pigs, yeah. sick, so that they have to shoot them all. And he's like, no.
Oh yeah, cholera.
Pig cholera.
Like I want to take the pig home. I want to investigate, and then I'll come back. And so he drives home.
Piggy home.
Yes. This is a nice monologue where, like, the start of every leap is like the song and dance of him trying to figure out like who he is and where he lives. And luckily, he
it helps to set a tone. Box.
Yeah,
right.
For the series in general, not just this episode. Yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so he pulls up to this young man
playing guitar to his goat.
Yes, and so and
he's writing a song to a goat.
Yeah, all she does is baa at me, yeah. Something like that. Yeah,
yeah.
And we were talking about this during the preview episode. One of the first times I stumbled on this series was on the last scene of this episode.
Oh, wow.
So
yeah.
The twist at the end of the episode was already...
It was ruined for you.
It was already spoiled at the me. So, yeah, so I've never seen this episode in the context of trying to figure out who this... of who this kid is.
I think I saw the episode so early. I mean, like I said, I was 7 years old when I first watched this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember watching it, and I remember certain bits of it, but ultimately, because, you know, the type of things that stick with you are that. And we'll talk more about it later, obviously. But, yeah, I think that I've never had the luxury of watching it that way either, really. Except for when I was seven. But because it's such a distant memory, I don't even really remember the quality of watching not knowing.
You can't trust
me. Yeah, yeah.
Sure. But it's so obviously Buddy Holly, though.
Right.
So obviously.
Yeah, I know. The glasses, the voice.
It's super cute. It's super cute.
It is.
And you know, and you see him, and you're like, oh, that's cute. And you have this little, like, Buddy Holly cameo in this episode, and you don't even realize that the main plot is a giant red herring for...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's
absolutely
right.
Yeah. And they do that, to not give spoilers away, they do that later with a third season episode, where Sam is interacting with this character the entire episode, and at the end, you turn out like he gives this big influence to someone later on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, and I think that the nice thing about that is that it also gives us a window into the fact that, and this is a cool thing, Ziggy is unreliable.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And that is nice.
They still haven't figured out what Ziggy's role is.
Yes.
But I think it's okay, because it's like Ziggy can tell Sam to do something, and when Sam questions it, it's okay that he questions it. It's not this idea, which is, it plays into the dramatic tension, because it's not this idea that everything's going to be planned out from the get-go. It's not going to be like, you have to do this, this, and this, and everything will be okay. Because where's the fun in that? But if instead, it's, you know, Ziggy thinks you need to do this, and it turns out to be something entirely different, All right. Well, maybe we don't know what's going to happen.
Rolling.
Like, it could be this, but maybe it's not.
Maybe. Yeah.
Speaking of Ziggy, we get Al.
But before that, there's a nice little moment where Sam, not knowing this young man's name, he keeps calling him Pard.
Pard.
And every time he says Pard, the dog barks.
Yes!
And the boy is just like, what? Like, he just has this forlorn look of like, why are you treating me like
that?
And then you find out that the dog's name is
Pard.
Poor
Buddy. Yeah. But yeah, absolutely. We find out that the dog's name is Pard because Buddy is like, you know,
but yeah,
the boy.
The boy, yeah. But then we meet Al and Al's storyline for this one, because early on in these early episodes, like, we got to have Al's story. And in this one...
Oh, God.
But
before that, wait. Time out. Real quick before that, animals.
Yes, this is an important, important coming later.
Claire, take it over.
Animals can see Al.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Animals can see Al. I forget if there's any sort of scientific explanation for that anywhere else in the series, but we can just leave it for, you know, suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
At this point.
I think it has to do with the fact that...
Yeah, it happens in the pilot. A dog can see him.
And
they don't explain it.
But they talk about it a little bit later, too, because there are other characters that can see him as well, and I think what it has to do is that there's a certain development, I guess, that the, you know, sort of their reasoning behind it is there's a certain development that happens in the brain that
if
people get older and more developed, et cetera, et cetera.
If you're in a purer mental state.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. It's like
you can see Al.
Yeah.
And in very much that way, Al is very similar to Pennywise the Clown from
Number one movie.
How timely.
Yes. Anyway, so so in Al's first appearance, animals can see him, and he is very worked up because Tina is cheating on him. With someone. And he wants to know,
like,
if Sam... And so...
All the
feminist bristles
in this episode.
Yeah, and this is a very nerdery thing. Once again, says a guy co-hosting a Quantum Leap podcast. it is very clear that Sam is supposed to know Tina.
Right.
The woman introduced in the pilot, we don't get her name, but from the credits at the end of the episode of the pilot...
is Tina.
Is Tina.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, obviously, that woman was a Tina, but not the Tina that is talked about through the rest of the series.
Fan theory.
Do it.
To be thrown out the window.
Were they doing some weird role-play thing on the side of the road?
Maybe they were doing some sort of weird role-play, which would explain the stilted dialogue that they have. Which is stilted. Come on, it's stilted. It's stilted. It sounds bad. It just, it does.
But they hang on to that role playing.
They do hang on to it.
After they get word
if
that,
she got in the, if
stuff's
she,
going down.
That's true. If she got in the car and then relaxed a bit, then that theory would hold together better.
Not to give,
but everything that happens before she gets in the car.
Could be role playing.
Could be role playing.
But not to give major spoilers away, when we see Tina later in the series, played by a different actress, acts in an entirely different way.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, hey, maybe Al's just got a thing for Tinas.
Maybe. But anyway, Tina is cheating on Al with somebody.
With someone. We don't know who yet.
And he's very worked up. And he is so confused, he is questioning Sam about this.
Which leads me to my Al line of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just didn't have many choices, but this one seemed fun. Have you ever seen Tina's tattoo? Because in talking about the cheating, he says something about how she's got this tattoo, but it's in a place that, you know, you can't see. And so he asks Sam this question because he suspects that it could be Sam.
He says it very possessively.
Yeah.
He does. And I jotted this down. I don't know if my friend John will listen to the podcast, but this whole thing at the beginning where Al sets up this thing, and I can't remember the dialogue exactly, but it's very clear that Al thinks it's just unbelievable that Tina would cheat on him, but it's perfectly okay for him to cheat on him. Reminds me of my friend John from childhood and the way he was in high school and college. Like,
well,
very much the very same.
I hope you grew up, John.
Very much the same. He did grow up because he got a wife who does not put up with that shit.
See, and here, you know, but you raise a very good point because I do think that, you know, I mean, talking sexual politics and et cetera, the thing is that there is absolutely the notion that a man, I mean, watch Mad Men, for God's sake.
Oh, yeah.
There's this notion that has been cultivated that a man can sleep with whoever he wants, and then if he, you know, zones in on that one woman that's his woman, that she's his woman and that's all there is to it, but he still gets to go around and do whatever he wants to do, but she has to stay true. The thing that's surprising about this, and I'm not saying that, you know, Al shouldn't be this way or whatever, it makes for an interesting scene, but I will say that based on everything else that we know about Al up to this point, and especially based on the things we get to know about him later, I am a little surprised that he's not a little bit more free with the idea that it's like, nah, this thing happened.
Exactly.
It kind of surprises me that he's as possessive as he is.
I don't know.
Especially
in Starcross, he sets Tina. He has Tina sleep with someone
else,
so he can blackmail.
Or at the very least, get caught in a compromising situation.
Yeah.
So it surprises me that he's as upset as he is. I mean, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. I don't know.
Love makes you do the wacky.
Quote of the episode.
Ain't that the truth?
Makes you do the wacky.
I was on a Buffy podcast for a second.
I love it. Yeah. I love
it. So in this episode,
all seven seasons are right in that booklet behind you. And all five seasons of Angel as well.
Oh, but if we want to talk about sexual politics and Joss Whedon, I think we should leave that for another can of worms.
To be fair, if we were talking about it like 12 months ago, it'd be an entirely different conversation than it would be now.
Anyway.
Back to
Al's philandering and jealousy.
Philandering. We get thrown out the interesting name Ike Bettenhoff.
What a great name.
Like, yes, exactly. Like, he expects, he suspects that maybe that's the person that Tina is cheating with. And apparently Ike works in somewhere involving the Energizing Chamber, which we never get an explanation of what the Energizing Chamber is.
Yeah.
Bettenhoff the Energizer. Yeah. I mean.
I almost wonder if it's something that's connected to the accelerator. You know what I mean? Something like that. I don't know. Who knows? But yeah. What's next?
But in this first scene, Ziggy throws out, or Al throws out, and this is a side trivia note, this is the first episode in the series where the handlink makes sound effects.
Yeah!
And the handlink was pulled from
Hanna-Barbera.
Hanna-Barbera stockpile of sound effects.
Yeah.
I love it.
But anyway, Ziggy's first hypothesis is that there's a 72% chance that Sam is here to cure the pig.
Which is what Sam wants it to be.
Yeah.
Sam's hoping that that's what it is, because
he doesn't want anything to do with this contest.
Yeah.
But in a way, Ziggy is not entirely wrong in that probability.
That's a very good point.
Maybe not really foreshadowing.
And we learn from future episodes, like the baseball part of the pilot, and another future episode, like sometimes Sam leaps in to do just really simple.
Yeah.
But look at the pilot episode, and it's weird because we know that Tom originally dies in the plane crash, and that by virtue of Tom living, that Sam's still there. And that Sam has to then go on to save the baby before he's successful. Mm. So you're right, Claire. Like, the pig, like, if he didn't save that pig...
There you go.
The ending as we know it, which we'll get to later, ain't gonna happen. So I think that it is interesting that there is that probability that, oh, it's got to do with the pig. Mm. And instead, this other theory is thrown out.
This other thing pops up. So we find out through this, through their conversation, Sam and Al talk about Tess... And Ziggy throws out another prediction that there's a 97% chance that someone who has been sending love letters to Tess will marry her. And it turns out that Doc, Daniel, has not been sending love letters, but he's been writing a diary.
Journaling
like hell, professing his love for Tess, and like Sam's like, well, like he's not sending him, it's whatever. And Sam's like, no, you gotta face it.
Yeah.
And there's like this nice little moment, like, you're here to marry this cowboy girl. Cowgirl.
Rancher.
Rancher, yeah.
She's a rancher.
Mm-hmm. She is indeed. I to be completely honest with you, at this particular point, I had not, other than there were a couple of notes that I took in this scene. I take it all back. I thought, I didn't write a lot of notes, but I did. So obviously there's some stuff affecting his brain, we know, because he can't remember who some of these people are that Al's talking about.
For sure.
Yeah.
Another funny line that I really enjoyed, and the way that Bakula played it was perfect, is when he looks at Al and he's like, Tina's cheating on you?
Boggles the mind.
Yeah, yes. it's a really well done moment for comedy's sake.
Yes. Early on in the series, Sam threw some serious shade at
For real.
Yeah. But that was that. I mean, I guess that was really the big note that we hadn't talked about, that I wanted to point out that line, because I did think it was amusing. So now we're set up that he's got to marry this, win this girl's hand
in order
to leap out.
Rancher.
So Sam shows back up at the ranch, and I assume it's the same day. It's not clear.
Yeah. It's actually, I will say this. The Quantum Leap Wikia says it is the next day.
The next day?
Okay. But who knows? Maybe it's not. That's just what the wiki says.
Whatever. Okay. So anyway, he shows up later that day or next day, and they think he's here to basically give a decision on whether or not the pig is okay,
right,
or whether or not they need
hog
to shoot
cholera.
Hog cholera. But he's here to take her up on the contest, and the first thing that he needs to do is break a horse
yeah.
or ride a horse or whatever.
Well,
and so Wayne sets him up with Widowmaker.
Yeah,
who
we don't know the name, he just
very confidently jumps on the horse and the horse eats Sam's lunch.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Yep. And then Wayne, of course, gets a good kick out of it.
And that's when Tess walks over and is like, no one's ever ridden Widowmaker besides me.
Yeah.
What a horrible name for a horse.
Yeah.
I feel so bad for that horse.
And yet at the same time, it's very much a cliche of the genre.
Oh, I know.
It's one of those things that it's just kind of like, okay, we're checking off the boxes here.
This is where the genre goes. Yeah.
Which is interesting in a way, because the last scene, I feel like, is not. The last scene is Quantum Leap. This scene and the scenes that follow are checking off the genre.
The episodic television.
Yeah. Interesting to go back before he jumps onto Widowmaker, there's this moment where Sam has a voiceover monologue.
Like, oh, to his dad.
Like, my dad always taught me, blah, blah, blah. And they did the same thing with the pilot. And I thought early on maybe that this was going to be
a thing, like a
running trope throughout the series. And I was like, thank God they got rid of this trope.
Yeah.
It would have gotten a little tired.
Also, because it seemed like his dad was wrong a lot.
yeah. Whatever. And this is, my ex-wife was very much in the horse world.
Yeah.
And my entire idea about how you break a horse was very much steeped in stuff like in this scene right here, and stuff that I saw on, Bonanza and other old westerns like that.
Yeah.
And in my relationship with her, Like, I learned, like, this is not...
Yeah, strangely enough...
This is not how you train horses.
No.
At all.
That's a little... Yeah. I know nothing about horses, but other than that, they frighten me.
Yeah,
I
know.
Just large. They're beautiful. I love them. I'm not anti-horse by any stretch of the imagination, mm-hmm. internet world. But, you know, I have a fear of heights, and even 8 feet up is... It's not even 8 feet. Whatever.
Sure, but it could be. Sometimes it's like 6 feet. Sometimes you're up there and you're like, yeah, wait. And plus, you know, No, I totally get it.
And I just want to hug and pet them, and that's about it.
I rode horses for the first time a couple of years ago, actually, and I'd always loved them. Just like, you know, I thought still think that they're incredibly beautiful creatures. And I remember going up to do the horseback riding with my then girlfriend, now wife, and. As we were standing there getting ready to ride the horses, all of a sudden I feel something on my shoulder and this nuzzling against my neck. And the horse that I'm going to ride has just walked right up to me and started like nuzzling.
That's
me.
A great sign.
And it relaxed me completely. I'm laughing. Like the horse trainer at first was just sort of like, and I was like, no, this is great. I feel good now.
Right?
And I got on the horse. And the funny thing is the horse kind of just did all the work. I didn't do anything.
Awesome.
And a couple of times, like the lead guy, like every once in a while, he'd be like, oh, you can slow him down if you need to. And I was like, he's the gas, man. I don't need to be the brakes. Like,
that's
cool.
Right.
Like, I'm just gonna let him do what he wants to do. We're having a good time. Mm-hmm. But I totally get it. And it's interesting to see an episode like this where the horses are involved and knowing a little bit about just, you know, having read stuff and seen like documentaries about what goes into actors and horses and, mm-hmm. you know, on television and films and all of that sort of stuff. And the connection that a lot of times that the actors or the trainers will develop with the horses.
Absolutely.
It's like Lord of the Rings, you know, I mean, to the point where Viggo Mortensen actually bought the horse that he rode in all the films because...
What a connection.
Yeah, he had such a connection with the horse. He's like, no, this horse is not just going back to wherever. Like,
Since you brought up Lord of the Rings, I'm going to write one little note here. So Mike Post, who writes all the music or composes the music for the show, totally... wrote a theme from The Shire before Howard Shore did
The Sweep from the Leap Home.
It's in this episode.
God,
it's
you're
in,
absolutely right.
Like in this episode, and I realize like in this day and age, it's all derivative. And I, you know, I'm a musician, and I totally understand how hard it is to write things. But like, I was like, Mike Post, you totally
stuff. Yeah, but a lot of his stuff, like listen to the
thank
quantum.
You. Clear.
It was just a little.
Yeah. No, that's
like,
I just
like
that
this is like this is a bit of a nerdy
so
music.
So many
episode.
Pieces in my brain. Like, things make so much sense to me right now.
This is so nerdy. Says the people hosting the Quantum Leap.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, like Mike Post stuff, like listen to the Quantum Leap theme, the original theme to Law and Order.
Yeah.
And the theme to Doogie Howser.
Yeah.
All in the same. They are all sisters.
Yeah.
Minus the sexy saxophone in.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with somebody like John Williams. You know, you listen to Star Wars, you listen to Superman, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
The theme from Harry Potter is just the Imperial March inverted, basically.
Yeah.
Is anyway, but yes. Let that blow your mind for a second.
Right?
So speaking of horses, the only actor in this episode who was actually comfortable with horses before the film was this episode was the actor who played Wayne.
Yeah.
And everybody else pretty much had to rely on the horse wranglers to help keep the animals in control.
Interesting.
So we have this moment of Sam gets thrown and Tess says, nobody's ridden Widowmaker but me, and Wayne comes up and he's had this moment like, hope you don't mind a little cowboy humor.
Yeah.
Hope you don't mind some cowboy attempted murder.
Murder,
like
yes.
Yeah, maybe manslaughter too, but still.
And then we come to the scene of them trying to rope calves. And this is where I feel like we talked about before, like one of the moments in the early part of the series where they really dive into the genre.
We need a montage.
There's just some really pretty camera work.
Yeah.
Oh, quite.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
In this episode.
Honestly, it makes me wonder too the exact filming location. Because while I will, you know, firmly admit to ignorance about the entire landscape, it doesn't necessarily look like Texas the entire time because some of the hills
it's
and the you know,
probably
but it
Southern
feels
California.
I'm sure,
all of it.
But I would be curious as to the specific like location, you know, in the area.
I don't think they went shooting on location anywhere at all.
Yeah.
I mean, do they even have the money?
I do remember a side note, seeing this was like on some nerd videotape that I got from like some Quantum Leap collector site like way back in the day. But they had big ambitions for the series early on, and before they realized the realities of struggling with a budget, they did want to do a lot of on-location shooting.
Yeah.
For the series and travel around the country. And then obviously it was something that really never really came to happen. And we talked about this in the last episode, like the Doc's house in this episode is the same house from Starcrossed.
Right.
Just heavily redressed.
Right.
And shot from different angles.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think it's interesting too, to think about, we talked about this with the pilot episode about how some television shows, you know, they'll have their pilot, they'll have some sets, and then things will change for the rest of the show. Obviously this being an anthology series, it's a little bit different with that, but mm-hmm. at the same time, the fact that they were like recycling a lot of the stuff and not getting to do some of the on location shooting that maybe they had dreamed of or wanted to do. You know, there was talk obviously of going to Hawaii for a Magnum PI episode and like all that sort of stuff. It's interesting to think of what popped into my head for some reason was Scrubs. And in the pilot episode of Scrubs, they use this downright frightening hospital stand-in that is not the same hospital for the rest of the series. And it's one of those things where sometimes, you know, a television show gets picked up, budget, you know, they get a little bit more money, and they make things look better, and they make things look different, and you just buy into it, and it's like, okay, sure, that's still Sacred Heart or whatever. But, in Quantum Leap, it was almost by virtue of having to have a different thing every single time, they almost had less money and had to scramble to kind of make it work in a way. You know, this isn't like Star Trek, where you get your bridge set,
right?
And
that's
your set.
And the uniforms, and...
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And your monochrome set,
yeah.
or whatever,
yeah.
for the different plans that they want.
This is
on.
Different costumes all the time.
Right.
And
period costumes.
Let's talk about those Western shirts, because I love them so much. It's like, aside from the pig, my favorite thing about this episode is all the Western shirts. The snaps... it's amazing.
Well, and you know, we didn't really talk a whole lot about this. We talk about Al's costume sometimes. We don't talk about some of the stuff Sam's wearing. But even going back to like Star-Crossed and A Right Hand of God, like some of the stuff that they're wearing, like these 70s era, the bell bottoms, the collars, the jackets.
I made a note from The Right Hand of God.
Yeah.
There's this one scene where he's like in these like checkered bell bottoms.
Yeah,
right.
And yeah.
So it's...
Yeah.
The obviously the visual presentation of the costumes is very well done, and for the most part it just feels right to whatever they're supposed to be. So I think that's something that the production team obviously does well when they're nailing things down as far as the look of these characters or what they're wearing. And in this episode, those shirts,
I love them so much. Like the chaps, the whole, like when he rides Widowmaker the second time, I'm just like, yep. That's a win. We'll take that. We'll take that outfit. Times 10.
Which is also funny when we get to the end of the episode and talking about his look and imagining him in those costumes.
Right, exactly.
Scott Bakula looks perfect in those outfits.
Oh my gosh,
Scott Bakula
works,
yeah.
I mean, you know, the hair and all that. Okay, so being a woman that appreciates a good-looking man, we'll just say that. I love Scott Bakula as an 80s... I don't want to say sex symbol because that just sounds too shallow, but he's a guy that, not like now where, you know, you get these like kids now that are just, they're just muscle, 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 muscle upon muscle.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Bakula looks like a dude that eats right and works out.
Yeah.
He, like, that's it. He looks like a normal person could achieve his level of sexiness.
Exactly.
And I miss that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I
so
miss that.
That's funny. Like, I made a post on Facebook last week because like I was watching a lot of episodes in preparation for this, and the season premiere of Outlander came on,
which I also watch and love.
Yeah,
but...
and someone made a comment comparing Jamie on that show versus Scott Bakula, and I looked it up and I couldn't find the article online when I looked it up this time. But a couple years ago, there was an article that came out that pointed out like 20 years ago, like Scott Bakula or someone like Scott Bakula was the definition of hot for men in Hollywood, like,
right.
just because,
right.
like, he ate right and worked out, and that was simple enough. But they specifically, in this article, they called out Quantum Leap era Scott Bakula as someone who was considered hot in that era, and who now simply would not cut it.
Which is,
well,
for men's Hollywood standards
it's
these days.
Funny that we bring this up, because in the October 1989 issue of TV Guide, or one of the issues of TV Guide in October, they named him one of the sexiest men on television.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, October 89, so you got to figure the second season has just started, and they're talking about him being one of the sexiest men on television. Flash forward, funny story, is apparently they still consider him to be one of the sexiest men on television with NCIS New Orleans.
That's
yeah.
It's funny. I was talking to my friend.
I did not even know that. know that was a thing.
Yeah, unfortunately. I was talking
wow.
I was talking to my friend Erin last night, who she is not a huge Quantum Leap fan. She is just a fan of Scott Bakula in general.
Mm.
To the point she has named her gray 2012 Kia Sport Rio, I think. She has named that vehicle Scott Bakula.
Oh my gosh.
A lot because it's a silver.
Yes.
He is now a silver fox.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And he, you know, to get us back on point a little, he does spend quite a bit of this episode shirtless.
Oh, the post-holing for days.
Yeah.
But sweaty.
But isn't that
flexing?
Like, but he's,
you know,
like shirtless in almost every episode, right?
He,
like,
you know, he...
Isn't that like a contractual thing? Like, I don't know.
He gets there.
There are,
he's not a Captain Kirk levels, but he gets there.
No,
right,
and whatever. For the most part, I feel like it's not really gratuitous. Like,
no,
it's like,
right.
Yeah, you know, he's post-holing. It's hot.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
Yes. Well, and that's the thing, too. It does drive home the fact that in that particular scene that we're talking about, it is very hot outside.
Yes.
You know, so they're backing it up with sound logic. It's not, let's just get a man topless and sweaty.
Mm-hmm. Bring us back on the... Yeah.
We're jumping ahead.
Yeah, to bring us back onto the plot. So, the next shot, they are out calf roping.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And we have the scene where Wayne questions Doc on, like, do you dally? Do you whatever? Do you, you know,
yeah.
tie the rope around the horns? And we also get this bit of advice between Chance and Doc of, like, you're screwing up because, like, you keep, like, going off and chasing whichever calf is closest to you. You got to pick one and stay on it. So, between those two bits of advice, Sam finally ropes a calf, but he... hurts himself wrapping the rope around the saddle horn, and we get this moment between Wayne and Tess, where she's like, "Did you tell him to like lift his thumb up?" And he's like, "No." And she's like, "You know, he's going to rip his thumb off." He's like, "Do you want to win this contest or not?"
Yeah.
And then that's when Sam hurts himself, starts screaming,
and does the oldest trick.
And does the oldest trick.
It's the oldest dad trick in the book.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah.
It's a total dad trick.
Like the dad trick, the reveal of the,
yes.
I'll have to grow.
Which you just did perfectly, by the way.
Yes, yes.
Wow, you have practiced,
yes.
See?
Yeah, I did this a lot when I in my childhood.
Dennis,
yeah.
Good with the dad tricks.
Yeah, right. Well, I have a 7-month-old son, so I gotta get used to him. And so this is a moment where I wonder if somewhere in Sam's Swiss cheese mind, he had some memory of roping... Or it was like a little mind merging with Doc. Like, I question whether or not if Sam even actually hurt his thumb in this scene, or if he was playing a joke on...
I think it was a joke.
Yeah.
I think it was a clever...
Yeah.
You know.
Like, he knew what was up, and he was playing a joke on Wayne.
Yeah.
For himself.
Yeah. You get the idea, too, because he echoes the cowboy humor line to Wayne, that you almost wonder if it's inferred that, again, Wayne gave him some advice that was bad advice... And he did the opposite this time, or
sure.
You know, something like that. Or maybe he did know how to do it. I don't get the idea, though, that in Elkridge, Indiana, there's a lot of calf roping going on, so...
Well, I'm sure,
you know.
like he had done a lot of calf roping, but he had read somewhere, like, it's
right.
Like he
yeah.
knew
yeah.
somewhere
yeah.
in his mind. But at the end of the scene, we do get a nice moment when he says, like, hey, don't mind a little cowboy humor,
mm-hmm.
and he gets a one-up on Wayne. Him and Tess share this nice little moment.
Yeah.
Where they just, like, look at each other and laugh, and... It's like this cute little bonding moment where you get this, like, oh, but they might actually work out.
Right. It's interesting, too, because thinking about some of the stuff that Tess says in the, you know, the very beginning of the episode, you almost wonder if she's ever even really noticed any of these other guys that are around, including Wayne, who seems to be friendly enough with her,
yeah.
you know, to ride up to her and be like, hey, you want to win this contest? You know, all this sort of stuff. Like,
well, I see it as almost a familial.
I know.
Like,
right?
She's like, these are all, like, these guys I grew up with, and yeah, technically they work for us, but they all, like, they all kind of, do they live there? Like, I mean, or nearby?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what, it's like, how many acres? I mean, it's something ridiculous.
Yeah.
They do throw it out there somewhere.
50 acres or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And which is a giant plot of land. But I mean, it's Texas, so whatever.
Yeah.
That's right. They got lots of land.
But no, I get the impression that she sees none of these people as romantic options, or whether or not she's even thought of
romance.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I see her as a very, like, ranch driven. She loves her animals. She loves her dad, obviously. Yeah,
right,
she loves Chance a whole lot. And she, this is her life, and she just wants to continue doing this. So why do I have to add somebody else to it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, my life is already great. What are you messing with me for?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I don't know. Well, I think that it's interesting that you bring up the familial thing, because I do sometimes look at the relationship she has with Wayne, and it is clear that Wayne is interested in her.
Yes.
But at the same time, I think that she does almost see him more as like a brother, you know?
I think so.
And so,
because they're chummy. They're chummy. They joke
exactly.
around. They work well together.
Right.
But there's like no flirting at all.
No. You not know? Even really on his part. Like I said,
yeah.
I think from his gaze mm-hmm. and from the, you know, some of the jealous behavior that he's exhibiting, that you get the sense it's like, Wayne's interested in Tess.
Yeah.
There's a part of me that almost wonders if the episode wouldn't have worked just as well if he wasn't. Do you know what I mean?
Right?
the relationship between the two of them would be kind of fun enough and different enough if there wasn't that interest. Now, obviously, as we'll mm-hmm. talk about how it plays into the finish of the episode, that mm-hmm. yeah, it's not gonna work.
Yeah.
But I will say there is a moment back in the first scene where she says, like, nobody can out cowboy him in this ranch, not even Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So clearly in the first scene, like, she considers Wayne above everybody else.
Sure. Still
oh yes, he is the best that is not her.
Right.
Yes. Yes.
Well, and he also looks the most likely too. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
you look at the guy,
same
and
age,
like,
looks. Yeah.
Right.
Dude, you're the cowboy here.
Right.
Like the rest of these guys, you know, maybe they can do certain things, but you could probably do it.
Yeah.
All.
Absolutely.
You know, at the end of the night, you drink half a bottle of whiskey and dance a jig. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it's like,
or don't, because
you're that dude.
They talk later that they don't dance.
Right. That's
yeah.
Right.
No, they don't.
No time for dancing.
So now we get back. Okay. The next scene, they're back at the ranch. And all Sam wants to do is go home and have a bath.
Bath. He talks about that bath so much.
And it's like, yeah, he mentions he drops bath like at least 5 times. That's like, no bath? I want to touch him in a bath.
Can
I
have a bath?
Bath?
Yeah.
Bath for Sam? No.
No, no bath.
And she's
for
like,
Sam.
Well, no, we gotta go in and talk about a heifer or a bull or something.
Yeah.
That's part of business. You gotta come on out. And he has the line like, Bonanza was never like this.
Yes.
Yeah. First of two references.
Well,
in
Bonanza, they would have, you know,
season.
Killed off the romantic interest immediately. So he would have been toast had it been Bonanza, actually, in real life.
Absolutely.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I never watched that. My mom always just told me.
I watched a lot of
that's what happens to the romantic interest in Bonanza.
Early, yeah. Absolutely. So
yeah.
So now we are at...
We're at the bar.
So now we're at the bar.
Playing poker.
Playing poker
playing
at the
poker.
Bar.
Since we're on the theme of reused sets, I'm pretty sure that the bar in this episode is a redressed officer's bar from the pilot episode.
Oh, of course
oh,
it is.
Oh, nice.
Why
yeah.
wouldn't it be?
Yeah.
Good
yeah.
eye.
Yeah.
Very good.
Absolutely. So now we are...
Probably
really,
the same. It's probably the same jukebox, too.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's fitting, honestly, in a way that Betsy, your wife, Dennis, transposed our faces onto Sam and Al, and that I'm Sam and that you are Al, because you are clearly the observer.
Yeah.
Like, you are incredibly more observant than I am. Like, I just watched the episode and I'm like, oh, these are the things that are happening.
What's
and you're like telling me, things like, well, this is actually
the,
from this.
This
and
yeah,
that thing did this
best,
thing
yeah.
did that thing. And I'm like, uh-huh.
Yeah, sure.
Whereas yeah. I'm all, wait, that's Hank Williams too,
what's
right?
What,
yeah, exactly.
It's one of those things,
yeah, exactly.
Like when I realized that they were reusing a lot of sets, it became a game for me. It's like, oh, where
which
have I
yeah.
seen this? Where have I seen this?
Sure,
set?
Sure.
For so they're talking about a bull that they are trying to sell in mm-hmm. the scene, and that's the pretense for the scene. And Tess has a line: half of my heifers are fighting to get near him, and the other half just sit back and admire his work.
Wow. Wow.
I got nothing.
I have. Yeah. I don't just don't even know what to say about that one. I mean, that's...
Does that
that's,
mean they're really intimidated?
I mean, that's the outline of this episode. He doesn't need to say.
Yeah, right?
It's just... Yeah.
Put that on a videotape and stuff.
That was
I don't know.
At one point, Betsy was watching the episode with me. Like, she feels like the writer of this episode like was very much steeped in the culture.
Mm.
Okay, yeah,
of
yeah.
cowboy culture. Like, she's like, it just feels right. Like, it feels...
Yeah.
She felt like the writer had, like either done their research really well or had been around.
And knowing that the writer...
People.
...was a woman, it would be very interesting to get inside her brain and find out, did you write this episode to meet certain expectations that you knew that the male producers, you know, predominantly in the male director, sure, would look at and be like, ah, yeah, that's fun stuff, let's use that. You know, did you write that because it was a parody? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Did you write this because you were kind of, you know, taking off of what you'd seen in other things? You know, or was it just like, this is what I'm writing? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, was there something else at work there?
What was their motivation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to know that. I don't know. Deborah, if you're out there, you're listening,
let us know.
Let us know.
Shoot us a line.
What's your motivation?
At Fate's Wide Wheel on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
.com. .org.
Yeah.
nice. So in this scene, Al shows up. We find out he is still brokenhearted because Tina's
run off with Gushy.
Tina's run off with Gushy, yeah.
That halitose having mother...
Yes.
Yes. And this is also where we learn where Tina and Al met. They had actually met in Las Vegas over a poker table.
Yeah, he had a flush, he had a pair.
Although that line makes me question whether or not that was actually the true way it happened, or he just wanted to say that.
It's very much like a joke, like, you want to know how I got these scars.
Right.
But yeah. The story is ever changing.
It varies.
And he also has a line in the scene that Tina took his second most favorite
organ
and stomped it with her 4-inch high heels.
You won't be needing this.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So in this scene, Al tips Sam off that Wayne is cheating. That he has...
with a dead man's hand.
Yeah,
that's right.
Which I was very happy that... I don't know... whatever. I get super nerdy, and I'm like, why do we have to explain these jokes? And then I realize, oh, it's 89, and not everybody knows that it's a dead man's hand.
Right, not everyone's seen Deadwood by this point.
Exactly! Yeah. Oh, shoot!
Well, actually, I did some research, because, like, afterwards, like, after the scene, where actually it's revealed that Wayne does not have aces and eights.
Right? No, he doesn't.
And then there's almost this fight that breaks out, and then Tess actually breaks it up. It's like, no, let's go off, let's take a break.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And
she has the hand.
And Al instigates to Sam, flip over her cards.
Yeah, flip over, and he's like, no. But it's at this point where, I can't remember which one, if it's Sam or Al, like, they throw out, like, yeah, that's a dead man's hand. Yeah. And I looked it up. A full boat, aces over eights, is not the true original definition of a dead man's hand. Like, over the years, like, some variation of aces and eights is considered a dead man's hand, but the original definition of a dead man's hand is two pair, black aces, black eights. Because supposedly that was the poker hand that Wild Bill Hickok was holding when he was killed.
Yeah.
So it's not simply aces and eights at all, it's specifically...
A pair of aces, a pair of eights,
both pairs black.
Yeah.
Once again, we're out-nerded by Dennis.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Amen, bro.
There it goes.
Yeah. So they go off to the bar, and they have this moment where, I guess, for anybody viewing at home, just to drive home the idea, there are two scenes that confirm that Wayne is cheating on Tess's mm-hmm. behalf. They confirm it with the scene between Wayne and Tess, and then we go back to Sam and Al, where that's where Al gets Sam to turn over the cards. And then Sam has this moment like, that's how she's going to play it.
Right.
Huh? Yeah. Because I was a little affronted when he automatically assumes that she's in on it.
Yeah, I actually wrote down the note, like, trust women more, Sam.
Yeah.
Trust women more.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Counterpoint, not to that, because I completely agree with you both, but counterpoint to that is Tess tells Wayne she doesn't need him to win, which I do think is a nice moment for her to have.
Right.
Like, when they're at the bar and Wayne is, like, divulging that, you know, he was doing it for her, and she's just like, I don't need you to win this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, you know, yeah, Sam's kind of like, what's up, Sam?
But then when you think about Wayne's stakes in this whole thing, that, you know, when we know that, you know, he actually is really in love with her and all that, so he's obviously trying to sandbag.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
So to go back another nerd moment, the actor who played Wayne was really good at riding horses. Apparently, he was so inexperienced at playing poker.
That's right.
Another person, Scott Bakula's stunt double, and the actor who played Chance, had to show him just how to simply hold a hand of cards.
No way, dude!
Yeah.
That's like my 4-year-old nephew. He can't hold cards to save his life.
Oh, wow.
But that's okay. He's 4. Love you, buddy.
Yeah. Some of the other, one of the other behind the scenes moments that we didn't mention earlier that I think is interesting too is that, going back to the pig for a second, that, you know, Sam had to hold this pig all this time for a lot of these shots.
They're squirmy.
They don't like to be held.
No.
So apparently it was a difficult thing to do, and the pig was also not free of relieving itself.
Oh, all Lord! Over.
Yeah.
And it's very noticeable that any scene that the pig is in, Scott Bakula had to go back and re-record all of his dialogue.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. And in some of those scenes, like, he's got, like, a death grip on the thing. You know what
right?
I mean? Yeah. You can tell he's just like...
He's like, pig! Yeah,
like, you're not going anywhere.
For sure.
So, but anyway.
At this point, you have to wonder if Scott Bakula could be like, I could still be on Broadway.
Right, yeah, exactly.
I'd be making less money, but I could still be on Broadway, not putting up with this.
Right. Yes.
It's a living.
But there's another scene in here between... going back to the moment between Wayne and Tess at the bar, Wayne has this moment where he's like, I don't know. There's something different about Doc.
Oh, yeah.
And almost all of these early episodes have this moment where a character laments, like, there's something different about the person that Sam has leaked into.
Yeah.
Which I think they get away from in later episodes.
They do. I think that there are certainly moments later on where you have a character kind of, you know, be like, you all right? Or, you know, things like that. But, yeah, for the most part, I don't think that there's any other real, like, yeah, it is sort of exclusive, I think, to early on in the series when they have those characters be like, not acting like himself, you know, stuff like that.
For sure. So now we move on to the scene we've already talked about, is the fencing scene.
Pole digging.
Pole digging.
My first
shirtless
note,
Scott Bakula.
I was going to say, my first note about this scene is, hells yeah, shirtless Sam.
Yes.
And yeah. But yeah, but it's like, okay, I don't want to say like every man hot, because yes, you have to work at it and whatever, blah, blah, blah. But like, I feel like it's a readily achievable sexiness, whatever, fitness level, blah, blah, blah. I don't know.
I will say this, another nerd moment. Scott Bakula, throughout the entire run of Quantum Leap, had 4 days off work.
Mm. Wow.
The entire run of Quantum Leap. And this was something he revealed in The Captains, which was a documentary where William Shatner went around and interviewed all of the captains from the Star Trek universe.
That's
and he was able to maintain a level of fitness while doing a series like this.
Well, probably wasn't eating.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. On the flip side, to bring William Shatner back into it, to be honest, I've never watched the entirety of the original series of Star Trek, but supposedly, if you're paying attention, you can tell where you're at in any given season of the original Star Trek series by how out of shape William Shatner is.
Totally.
Oh, no.
Early in the series, early in the season, he's in shape because he had the summer off and he could work out. As the season goes on, he has less time to work out, and Captain Kirk is a little bit more pudgy.
No, don't get me wrong. Like, it's difficult. I mean...
Yeah. But also, I mean, look at the physical fitness of Scott Bakula now.
Yeah.
Versus
William Shatner.
Versus William Shatner, like, even like 10 years later, by the time that they went to the motion pictures.
Hard choices.
Yeah.
Hard
well, choices. You know, obviously the demands of the schedule were clearly high, but I think that the show was also pretty physically demanding. So it was probably difficult for him to not stay in shape a lot of times. It's like, you know, I work around a lot of ballet dancers right now, and, you know, one of them got asked a question about nutrition and physical fitness, and you know, the dancer was like, not trying to be smart or anything, but it's like, it's hard not to stay in shape.
Yeah.
Like, with what we're doing, you know, it's like, yes, I think about what I'm eating and I try to eat the right things, but I'm not, you know, it's not like I'm constantly sitting there being like, I'm on a diet or I have to get to the gym to do this or this. It's just like the nature of the work kind of keeps me this way. And I think that, you know, a show like Quantum Leap, because one could argue, as much as Shatner, for instance, is in those three seasons of Star Trek, he was not in every single scene. Whereas Scott Bakula is in nearly every single scene of every single episode.
True.
And that, I think, is, you know, is a huge difference too.
But
yeah, clearly from this scene, boy's in shape.
Yeah.
So, I feel like I'm coming off as very shallow. I'm not that shallow, but he looks good in those pants.
Yeah.
So
I don't disagree.
We can own it.
What's interesting about the scene, too, I just thought about it, is that later seasons, you see Sam bumble a lot more with whatever. So I think, like, if this episode had come later on in the series, like, you would have had a whole scene of just, like, Sam bumbling, trying to figure out how to dig a fence post.
Right.
Or how to dig a hole for this one. And this one is just kind of taken for granted that...
Well, he's a farm boy, that's some farm boy stuff.
And I do buy, and I buy the, yeah, I buy the post digging more than I would buy him, you know, roping heifers.
Yeah.
But that being said, mm-hmm. yeah, it does kind of make sense, but, and this is a big but, this is quite possibly the most misogynistic we ever see Sam.
Oh my god, no, can I say the line?
Yeah, totally.
That kills
yeah.
me? Mm-hmm. So, what is it? Some things a man can do better than a woman, and some things a woman can do better than a man, like have babies.
Yep. Yes.
I was what?
So I heard that line, and so I viewed this episode twice in the lead up for this, and yes. Like, yes, that scene jumped out at me. Because he has a line earlier that seemed like, oh,
women's lib is gonna love
you. Oh, that too!
But then watching it the second time, like, was that something that Sam truly believed? Is it they really didn't know who Sam was at this point? Or you could also argue, like, he's kind of like poking Tess. Like, do you really want to do this? Like, are you into this contest? Do you really want to marry a man who out cowboys you? Like,
yeah.
What are you trying to do?
Well, okay, that's some solid spin. And if that is actually what he was. The justification for that
like,
line?
I didn't get the first
time. I will give you that.
I didn't get the first time, but the second time, because like he immediately follows that, because like, she says something like, I don't want to make babies, and he immediately follows that up with like, yeah, but that's why you're doing this contest, right? Like, you want to get married, and you get married to have babies. Like, is this what you really want to do?
It's true.
And you could argue, yeah, it's a misogynistic right. line, but also at the same time, like, he's trying to figure out, like, does Tess really want to do what she's
yeah.
doing?
Right, is that, it's almost like, you know, the language that's used versus the intent of the words.
Yeah.
And I think that in this particular case that, yeah, you could definitely be onto something, especially because what happens in this scene is that she collapses from heat exhaustion, you know, Sam takes her to Doc's house, mm-hmm. and once they get to Doc's house to start yeah. to cool her off, he
by the way, as they pull away from the scene, Wayne is totally creeping on him.
Oh, yeah, I saw that!
Yeah.
But they get to Doc's house, and he tells the boy to get him some salt and some water, and then proceeds to strip Tess down.
Yeah, also, now, WTF.
But,
I mean...
And again, a right. later season, Sam would have totally... he would have had problems with stripping.
Right.
I mean, I know Sam Beckett's a doctor, like, technically.
Yeah.
But in this show, he's just a vet. So how is... Well, whatever. I don't know. Heat exhaustion.
Sure. You know, and what I would say to that is that I think that followed up after a line like we just heard... He's never like ogling her. Like, he's never like taking her clothes off and being like, I've got her in a bra and underwear
now.
Yeah,
no, he's super professional.
There's never anything predatory about it. Yeah,
there's nothing sexy about this scene.
No, yeah. And so it's done very well. At the same time, it is, you know, as you're watching it, you're just sort of like, okay. Like,
yeah, those snaps were bubbling really easy.
Here we go. Like, just going for it, you know. And then, of course, the boy comes in and he's like, oh, boy, you know.
Right.
He doesn't say that because there's no oh, boy moment in this episode.
Which is weird.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's that very clinical sort of, I'm trying to nurse her back to health. And,
yeah.
of course, she starts to come back and get
nice left hook.
Yeah. She looks at you, man.
Left hook.
Yeah, and just pops in one.
Yeah, also, why isn't she wearing an undershirt? That's just saying. Like, because your west, like, your outside shirt, like, that's your nice shirt. Like, and you,
for sure.
you're working and sweating all day, like, that's what the undershirt is for.
Right, right.
Just saying.
Well,
but,
and,
you know, TV.
Yeah, exactly.
You gotta see
yeah.
the cute little lacy bra and those giant bloomers.
And it's just, yeah, right. We gotta cover up that part.
Giant bloomers.
But not the other part as much. Of course, she takes the blanket to cover herself up for modesty's sake, and
right.
you know, Sam's like, no, I'm just trying to help you, and you gotta trust me.
And then he says, next time I'll take off all your clothes,
cover yourself up, you got heat exhaustion, next time I'll take off all your clothes.
Yeah.
Like, that is the most...
That was a fist-shaking moment for me.
That was like, mm-hmm. I would argue that that's the most misogynistic line in the episode.
Beckett.
It's like, oh yeah, I'll punish you, and I'll just strip you down.
No.
Yeah. Well, but then you know, she has this great line too, because he's, you know, he's like trying to get her to trust him, and she says, you know, I don't trust you, Doc. I just trust me. And it's a really interesting moment for her, and I feel like it's probably one of the deeper lines of the episode, because here's something we never see, and I could be mistaken about this. My memory could be a little Swiss cheesed. We don't ever even hear about her mother.
No, we know she. Died
yeah.
when she was really young, I think.
But that's like all we get.
Mm-hmm.
But Yeah.
And so I feel like, you know, if we go a little deeper into this particular moment for her, you know, the only figures that she's had around her are men, mm-hmm. you know, her dad is, mm-hmm. is, you know, and so she's clearly trying to live up to this ideal of what they're supposed to be. And she's developed this sort of sense about herself for whatever reason that she doesn't trust anything or anyone except herself. Mm-hmm. You know, she doesn't say, I don't trust you, Doc. I trust my daddy and I trust Wayne and I trust, you know, she says, I don't trust you, Doc. I trust me. And in some ways, I think it's the most powerful moment that she has, because a lot of this episode, we see her, you know, kind of giving away a lot of that power, you know, mm-hmm. giving into the contest, you know, Wayne's helping her at the card game, you know, all this sort of stuff. And so even though she's, you know, standing there almost quite literally naked, this is her opportunity to just be like, you know, I trust me. Now, of mm-hmm. course, she waits it out. She, you know, she go ahead, she takes his advice.
Sure.
But I think it is a cool moment. Mm-hmm. There's a storm coming overhead. The boy decides it's time to take off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She almost, there's a moment where she says, hi, buh. And a crash of thunder, like, breaks up. Like, you almost learn his name.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, alas, you don't.
Yeah. And there's, like, Sam says to her, like, do you want the boy to stay? And it's just, like, so, like...
Come on.
Heartbreaking for Buddy.
Yeah, poor Buddy.
Like, just learn my name.
Can't catch a break.
Learn.
So now we cut to later on. The storm's going on. We find out that Piggy has allergies.
Yep, so Piggy has allergies.
Piggy has allergies.
And now...
Thunder scares Tess.
Yep, that's what you're going to say. To completely go off of what I was just saying about how she's got this nice, powerful moment, I literally wrote, why is she afraid of the thunder?
Word.
Because at this point, she has to have some weakness to undermine her.
Sure.
From a writing.
Well, she already had the heat stroke.
Exactly. She's already too stubborn to drink her water when she needs
right?
to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we have this line where Sam says, it's not a sin to be afraid. And she's, it is in Texas.
Yeah, there you go. Texas friends, is it a sin to be afraid?
No.
Write us, tell us.
At FHYWL, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
Or FWWQuantumLeapPod.com.
So they have this dance to Hank Williams Sr.'s
yes.
Cold Heart.
Which is a little bit on the nose.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Always good to hear Hank, though.
Yes.
Recorded in 1951, for those playing at home.
Yeah. So at Fantastic. The end of the scene, where they kind of tally up, like, I didn't realize until at this point, like, the contest had a deadline.
Yeah.
But now we clarify that, yeah, there is a deadline.
Yeah.
And right now, she has him on calf roping, and...
It's roping, and wrangling, and drinking.
There we go.
She has the leg up.
Roping, wrangling, and drinking, and he has her on post-hole digging...
Poker.
And now dancing. And
I would argue that her skills are much more useful, but, you know.
But hey.
Whatever.
But it's a tie, and she points out, like, it's not a tie.
Right, and they don't kiss, because they almost kiss, but she's like...
Well, no, he tries to kiss her, and then she's just like,
Yeah. You ain't winning this contest.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yes. And also, okay, sorry, getting a little 2017 feminist here.
Do
but, like, she is... Like, she had heat exhaustion, she faints, she wakes up in this place, has she ever been there before? I don't know. She wakes up without her clothes on, and in this weird guy's, not weird guy, but guy she kind of knows, but not really,
mm-hmm.
not in any sort of, like, friend sort of way.
For sure.
House, on his couch, and she's afraid of the thunder, and he's basically, like, keeping her there, and now he's like, oh, dance with me, and she's like, like, all of the... She is totally legit to be afraid of him in these surroundings.
It's like the Just summer... Saying. It's like the summer Texas version of Baby, It's Cold Outside.
A little bit!
There we go.
Thank you, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's putting, you know,
but
I mean...
Baby, it's storming outside and you have heat exhaustion.
Exactly!
Yeah,
what's in the salt water?
Like, yeah. yes, yeah. like, she's got nowhere to go, so she kind of has to just, like, go with what he's going with.
Right.
What's going on.
And so he tries to kiss her, like, I totally understand where she's really frightened by this and affronted.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
But I don't think she... I don't think the way the scene's written, like, she's not frightened by him or affronted by him making a pass. Like,
no.
She's letting herself get too close.
And there's that, too.
And I would certainly say that Sam's not necessarily preying on her, you know, but...
But there is just... She is justified in her uneasiness.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And I think that it's scenes like this, and, you know, again, not to get too sociopolitical mm-hmm. and look at it with our liberal 2017 eyes, but it's scenes like this that I think reinforce the idea that it is okay you know, for a man to look at a woman and say, you know, stay.
Oh, totally.
You know, no, have that other drink with me. No, go ahead and do this with me. And even though we can look at it in the context of the scene and the context of who Sam is and who Tess is and say, like, and kind of excuse it in a way, it seems like this are not unique to this episode.
Yes.
We see stuff like this in a lot of entertainment media, especially from stuff from a certain time period.
Yes.
And from, you know, and it is kind of excused as like, ah, it's all right, it's all right. And so it's interesting to look at it through that lens. Flip side of that being, I don't think Sam's preying on her. I think Tess can handle herself and is okay with the scene. And I think that it's Sam's desire to accomplish his mission.
Yes.
You know, is certainly sort of predicating the idea that dance with me, I'm gonna try to kiss you, let's get the show on the road,
right.
Time for me to
now,
leap on.
Is,
you know,
Doc kissing her or is Sam kissing her?
See, now that is a great question. Not just for this episode, but for Quantum
Just
League.
In general, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think going back to the physical thing, talking about Right Hand of God, when Kid Cody gets punched or Sam gets punched, Sam has the cut above his eye.
Yeah.
So I would say that, you know, Sam is kissing her. Emotionally and mentally, is Sam kissing her as Doc Young?
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Don't know. Is Sam kissing her to forward Doc's intentions, or is Sam
kissing her
because
he wants to kiss her?
He's kind of digging her too.
That kind of gets muddy because to jump ahead a couple scenes, it is clear through voiceover that Sam is starting to develop.
Yeah,
he is digging her. Yeah.
For Tess, which, like, I don't... That's one of those things, like, I don't know if that's necessary.
Well,
like, I feel like it was written that way to
it's
get...
It's an occupational hazard.
Yeah, to give Sam's character some stakes.
Sure.
But also, I think it would have been a very interesting choice for, like, you know, Sam is a doctor, he is a scientist.
Yeah.
For it to be very clinical, like, you know what, I would not be interested in Tess in real life, but this is what I'm here to do.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
I need...
Is he playing the character?
I need to basically play Doc and advance this along.
Well, and I think that comparing it to the pilot episode, I think there is no doubt in my mind that a couple of the times at least that Sam is kissing Peg.
Most assuredly.
Like, Sam is like, you know, that is Sam, not playing the role, not trying to get it accomplished. He is, because he's into her.
Yeah.
Sure. I would argue that with Dixie, Sam is into her. With Tess, I don't know. It is an interesting question because there's a part of me that's kind of like, maybe...
Well, that,
but
I mean, this,
I mean
this,
he says
I mean,
in the voiceover that he is, so I guess we have to take it that
he
is.
It's a unique episode in that, like, the romance is not just a side to the story. The romance is the story.
Yeah.
Like,
true.
At this point, like,
he believes
there to get them together.
Yeah.
Very good point.
So making a pass is part of
his mission.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, so she pulls herself away from that. She drives home crying in the thunderstorm.
In another great shirt.
another fantastic
that,
shirt.
That green shirt. It's so good.
And so now we cut. But before she leaves, she throws out one more ultimatum, like the tiebreaker.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right? I love the line, like, tomorrow's Sunday, and unless you plan on out-praying me,
right,
the contest is over. And then he's like, you got to give me a tiebreaker. And then she throws out, right, Widowmaker. And then when Sam balks at that, she's like, yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's, I feel like that's the best play she could make at that
sure.
point.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, it's like the number one thing that she knows that she can do, and that as of yet, no one else has been able to do. So as far as she's concerned, she's like, I got this.
Yeah, I got
it's
it.
Over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So... Moving right along, because I honestly think that there's a moment we're getting to, and I'd just like to get there. Sam shows up, gets on Widowmaker, he succeeds.
By the way, I want to go back and I want to complete my nerdery trifecta by calling out previous sets for this episode.
Yeah?
Like, while they do a wide establishing shot of the farmhouse, when we cut up to the close-up of Chance sitting on the porch.
Totally.
And Tess walking out, like, that's the front porch from Starcrossed.
Yep.
Nice.
They just did a close-up of that. Yeah, that's their house that they like to use.
Hey, man, that's like props and sets department right there,
yeah.
man. Just
right.
turn that over week
yeah.
over week.
So he shows up, and he just walks right in, and he...
Hops on that horse.
And, I mean, he gets Widowmaker, like, saddled up.
Al,
and up.
Yeah, and Al does show up to try to give the assist.
To assist. But, like, I don't care about Tina anymore.
I don't
care if she calls me, whatever. Sam's like, hey, can you keep Widowmaker under control
right.
while I'm doing this thing? And then,
he's
of course,
doing his ohm.
Yeah, and of course, Al gets, yeah, ohm.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then Al gets a phone call.
Yeah, from Tina.
From Tina. He's like, peace, brother.
Yeah, I gotta go.
Yeah, and then we get another shot of the imaging chamber door.
Yeah.
Which is just an invisible
little door opening up and closing. Thing. And, well, and, you know, I struggle, because I get it, and I don't mind it, and I'm not going to nitpick at it like maybe I did in some of the stuff that I talked about in Right Hand of God, but it is interesting that Al takes off like this, because I feel like it's the first time that we've ever seen Al effectively bail on Sam.
Yeah.
We've seen him show up late.
Yeah.
We've seen him not give the answers, but we've not yet seen him just be like,
bail.
Hey, see you later, man. This, right?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Bye.
And so that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. It is what it is. I don't mind it. I'm not going to be like,
but we get the dramatic moment of Al, right? Or not Al, Sam.
But Sam not having to ride
Widowmaker.
Right.
Yes. And you know, gets off the horse, and so it's like, oh, you won, and Sam's just like, I did it to prove a point, not to marry you.
Yes. No. Actually, he says something else. Did I write this down?
He says something about her dress. He's like, you ought to wear a dress more often. Which I was like,
No, it wasn't that. He was like, he says something to the effect of like, I just wanted to show I could ride him. Not her.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh,
that was right.
And then he drives off.
That was Sam like redeems, not that he needed it, but like this whole episode is like, oh, okay.
And it does make you wonder, and you know, maybe we're being a little too critical of some of these points. I mean, I don't think so. I think it's good that we're raising the points that we are, but it does make you wonder if the writers and if, you know, Scott Bakula, if there was this idea that, you know, this is where Sam is within the mission, and this is who Sam really is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and that all that other stuff that we saw is like Sam trying to complete his mission, and now we have Sam just being like fed up with it, over it, and be like, no, this is why I did this, and I'm out.
This is right. So before we move on, like, this is like one of the most interesting scenes in the episode is, so Sam has ridden Widowmaker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Tess gets a gun and just shoots Widowmaker.
Wait, what?
No.
I'm like, did you watch a different episode?
Just want to make sure you're paying attention at home.
Crazy.
By the way, Mikey got hit by a bus.
Yeah.
The show took a turn.
Like watching that scene, like, my dark sense of humor is like, and this is where Tess shoots Widowmaker.
Yeah, oh my god.
Oh my lord, yeah. Wow. Well, right, because, you know, hey, if it's hog cholera, we gotta shoot them all.
Useless.
Maybe it's just because, like, I just watched an episode of Game of Thrones where one character's horses fails him, and he just jumps off the horse's head. Yeah. But anyway, so Sam drives back to the ranch, and we have this moment where he's, like, kind of talking to Doc. Just like, hey, you have to trust me. Like, I can't win her. Like, she has to show that she wants to
do this. Right. I can't coerce her into doing this. It's got to be by her choice.
Mm. I find it interesting, and I don't know if you guys have talked about this in previous episodes, but, like, Sam is obviously believes in God.
I think so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I find that interesting that, I don't know, somebody who is such a time-traveling scientist can have also that faith in a higher power, and I kind of dig that. I personally consider myself a convince me atheist. So anybody out there that wants to convince me, feel free.
Hit us at Faith-Wide Wheel.
I think it's kind of cool that that, you know, this person with what, like, 6 PhDs, is like they say, has like 6 doctorates or something, and who obviously is well advanced in, you know, time travel and quantum theory and all that sort of thing, can still you know, believe in as of yet unknown entity is there you go.
Yeah.
It's very comforting.
It is an interesting thing, because I do think that there are episodes that touch on it more than others.
There's a whole thesis people have written out there, I'm sure, about, you know, Quantum Leap and God and
right,
you know,
well,
that's what Google is for. It's interesting.
Find that thread on Reddit,
right?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think that just based off of the amazing things that he's seen and accomplished, maybe there is that idea that, you know, there's got to be something more, you know,
yeah.
There's got to be something. It's like the astronaut.
He's looking for a purpose in this whatever he's been thrown into.
Yeah. Well, it's like you have astronauts who you know, make these grand statements about touching the face of God and all this sort of stuff. And then you have other astronauts who I'm sure are just sort of like, nah, nothing up there. Like, yeah, it's there, sure, it's whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's important, like, Sam grew up in Indiana, but sure, the Midwest, and so that probably plays a lot.
And it's clear through, you know, later episodes, too, that he's familiar with going to church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Sure. So, yeah. So yeah, he has this moment, and then who should show up?
Yeah, Tess. Yeah. Yeah, Tess shows up, and in this scene we reveal, I can't remember the exact line, but Tess throws out the line where she's still very skeptical, like she doesn't believe that anyone could want to be with her just to be with her, like it's all about Riata, like yeah, whoever marries her,
right,
really, and
they really want Riata,
yeah,
and
that she feels that way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it makes some of the other things clear too about her only trusting herself.
Oh, most assuredly.
Like she's looking at everybody, thinking that there's some ulterior motive. Like they want me for mm-hmm. the ranch, not for me.
Because
yeah,
I'm sure they've been coming out of the woodwork, like,
oh,
trying
yeah,
to get that land, and
absolutely,
they just—I mean—they just think that she's, you know, she's the key to the land, and want to have nothing to do with her.
Absolutely. And the minute they marry her, she's done riding horses. She's
yeah,
done, you know what I mean? She's sitting in a house.
Her hair
babies,
gets exponentially bigger.
Right.
You know. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, even though I think there's a valid critique of some of her statements about not wanting to be like a woman, I think that there's also a very valid intellectual argument for the reason she says those
yeah,
things, because she sees that as being, you know, kind of a cage, and she sees being a woman and getting married as taking these things away from her, because I think that her birthright in her mind is Riata.
Yeah.
And she thinks it's hers.
It is. It's
not,
her,
not to share with some man, not
no,
to give to some man.
It's
you
her
know,
identity. Really, that ranch is her identity.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And that's, yeah.
But Sam decides to give her the journal.
The journal, like, yeah, like I, yeah, I had
this. That's a bold move, man.
Yeah,
yeah,
I had all these feelings. And so, yeah, I mean, what best way to present Doc's feelings and
absolutely,
Doc's
oh,
words.
Most assuredly. It's
and so she looks it over, and then she asks him if they can dance.
They can dance.
They have a dance, and I forgot until I rewatched it the second time. Like, they actually have a kiss. I always...
They do!
I misremembered this as, like,
yeah,
they have an almost kiss. But no, like, they have a full-blown kiss, and that's when Wayne shows up.
Yes.
That's right.
And it turns out, Wayne... I've been hoping to rope you.
Right?
Wayne's
looking nice in his white shirt and his bolo.
Yeah.
Like, I'm all about the costumes in this episode.
Absolutely. And again, we have this moment while he was getting ready for church.
Yeah.
But again, we have this moment where Tess thinks that Wayne just wants her for Riata. And he clarifies, like, no, you
can
keep
Riata. Yeah,
like,
keep Riata.
I want you. And you have this great moment. Like, yeah, I wrote these letters. I love, like, in the background, Sam's just like, oh man.
Yeah, how did get the girl?
That was it.
And so we have this awkward moment where Doc and Wayne are sitting in the house.
No,
yes.
My notes in just like giant block letters for this the second dance is awkward. Because Sam's just kind of standing in the back with his hands behind him, just like, you guys are dancing in my living room.
Right. Yeah, and at this point, like, Sam has full-blown developed feelings for...
Yeah.
I think Sam has.
For Tess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Can you just, like, imagine if getting Wayne and Tess together was the whole purpose of the mission, and that they start dancing and Sam leaps out and poor Doc Young leaps in?
Oh, dude! Oh, no! That would have been the best!
And, like, all of a sudden, like, he sees the two of them. I mean, just that
poor
son of a bitch.
And insult to injury, like, she's read his stuff. Like,
yeah, right. She knows
what
Doc
Young
feels. Yeah.
Yeah.
And chose.
It's slightly callous of her in a way, but not really. I mean, whatever. Make your own choices. Like, I'll be
right.
For sure.
Sure.
But that leads us into the next scene. We have this nice old moment where Sam has a monologue where he compares it to this heartbreak moment of having a crush on his kindergarten teacher.
Oh, that's
yes,
right. It's
like
so
that,
endearing.
And how he eventually got over it.
By having a crush on
his first grade teacher.
By getting a crush on the next one. Yes. But that kind of undercuts Doc's thing. Because, like you said, like, Doc's going to leap back.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is not just some simple crush. Like,
no, Doc's pretty screwed.
He's in love with Tess, and he's going to leap
he's
back.
He's reading these things, yeah.
And first off, what the hell is Buddy doing singing on the porch?
I mean...
Well, before we
second,
get there,
before we
get
there,
there's the mirror moment. We finally get our mirror moment.
There's the mirror moment. So, yeah, the next scene, it's some... apparently, either Sam hangs around for several weeks while they plan a wedding... Or they have a whirlwind wedding within a couple of days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Al shows back up, and Sam is clearly upset with Al because Al left him
high and dry.
Al left him in the lurch. Piggy takes off on him because she's fully healed and takes off. And so
but we didn't talk about the mirror moment though.
We're coming to
but the mirror moment happens before the pig takes off.
No, it doesn't.
Are you sure?
I'm sure. Because that scene takes off.
I'm just going back to the bottle feeding part, yeah, and I'm just
That scene actually starts off with Sam feeding Piggy with the bottle, and uh-huh. Piggy runs off,
uh-huh.
and then Al shows up, uh-huh. and then Al and Sam have their little moment.
Right.
Al is clearly upset with, or Sam is clearly upset with Al.
Right.
And Al clarifies that him and Tina are back together, and Gushy was just something to make
Al
jealous.
Gave him a case of mouthwash.
And then we have the mirror moment.
Okay, yeah, that's sorry. I thought when you said the pig ran off and you started talking about Buddy, I was like, wait a minute.
No.
Okay, so we have the mirror moment. And two things about the mirror moment. You can't feel too bad for the actor because the actor is clearly a handsome man.
Very!
But they decide by throwing a pair of glasses and slicking his hair down all dirty like.
Hairline.
Yeah. That all of a sudden Mr. Sloan Fisher, who died at the young age of 38 in 1995, but had just come off of a television movie playing the title role in Tarzan in Manhattan, for which he...
I've seen that.
Yeah. So he's barely dressed for the whole thing. So the guy's clearly like good looking, good shape, etc. But for whatever reason, they cast him in a role as Al and Sam basically say, well, he didn't have much to work with.
Yeah. And there was a thing like watching this episode again with Betsy the other day. She was like, so he's supposed to be ugly?
That's what
right.
I said.
Like, okay, he has a receding hairline. All right. And he wears glasses.
Yeah.
He's a little dorky looking.
So what?
But...
yeah, not that ugly. Thing
yeah.
two, and this is the one that really gets to me. He has glasses on, but Sam does not.
Right? What's that about?
You know, so, interesting thing. If I'm up on my trivia correctly, actually, I think, like, even though this episode aired, like, fourth, this may have been the first episode they filmed after the pilot.
The next one is.
Yeah. Okay. So they were still early on, so they still hadn't established, like, what the
right.
rules
how it
are.
All, okay.
And the thing is, like, that's something that used to really bug me when I was younger, but now thinking about it, think about this. When Sam leaps into someone who wears glasses, later on, they more clearly establish the fact that it's Sam physically leaping
mm-hmm.
there. So when Sam puts on somebody else's glasses...
the prescription's going to be wrong.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So... and if Sam is surrounded by the aura of the person that he's leaped into, I can kind of buy into, like, even though Sam isn't wearing glasses, when people look at Doc, they see glasses because they expect to see glasses.
Sure, I guess.
Okay.
But the mirror image thing, that I guess it bothers me because then I have to say, well, then what the hell is Sam doing in the clothes? Like, why isn't he wearing the white jumpsuit?
Some women would have much
preferred. I was going to say, that would have made for a very
So here's what bugs me the most out of this moment. It's not the fact that he's ugly, not ugly. It's not the fact that he's wearing glasses when Sam is not. It's that they don't come right out and say it, but they heavily imply that Sam has been here for over 48 hours at this point, and he had yet to look in a mirror.
Yes! Yes!
Because
that
the way he smiles and says, hi, Doc... and it's like, I mean, especially like when he first leaps in, he has mud all over his face. There's not a moment like when he looked in the mirror and scrubbed himself down.
Right?
That's my big, and I think there's only one other
boom.
There's only one other episode in the series where a part of the plot relies on
the mirror image.
Sam not looking in the mirror for a significant amount of time. That's my biggest issue with this.
No, that's you're right. That one's better than the other two.
That one really is, actually.
No
spoilers, but
so
yes.
Here we go.
So now
our big finish, our kiss with destiny, and apparently the real reason
the
why
real
Sam
reason
back
was
there.
The whole romance is a red herring.
But before we get there, we get out on the porch, and Sam has this weird moment. Like, for once, can you walk through the door? And he holds the door open for Al, and Al throws out, and Buddy is like, what the hell? What's going on? But then Al has a moment, he says, like, there is a certain percent chance that you'll leap as soon as Wayne and Tess say, I do.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's this idea that Sam physically has to remain there until the thing happens. It's very much like the kiss at the end of Starcross that we talked about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Last episode, or a couple episodes ago.
Yeah.
And so Sam has to physically stay there until the thing happens, but then we get this moment.
Yeah.
Maybe the real moment. I never interpreted this as the real thing that Sam was there to do. I've always taken this as a as a bonus.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
As God, time, fate, or whoever throwing him a bone.
Yeah, just an extra thing.
Like, hey, have fun with this one, Sam.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, the moment when he realizes who Buddy is.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, I'd pee a little bit, too, if I realized that I had given Buddy Holly Peggy Sue.
Yeah, well, because what's happening is the boy's sitting on the porch, he's playing his guitar, the pig is gone, they're trying to find the pig.
Yeah.
He starts singing Piggy Suey. And so Sam realizes, Al realizes.
He's got the
so Al is like, hey, go ahead and try.
Yeah, he's like, go ahead, Sam, you know.
Yeah.
And
he says, hey, buddy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I love that Sam looks at Al like, is it okay if I totally met? Like, I think it's funny that they've been messing with the space-time continuum this whole time. Mm-hmm. And then Sam looks to Al and goes, wait, can I do this, like, one very, like, important thing?
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. Al's like, yeah, whatever.
Why not? Go for it.
But, I don't know.
And he does.
Yes.
And so he tells him Peggy Sue, and
so we end with Buddy Holly singing
Peggy Sue.
Yes. Yeah.
Which, I had to look this up because I'm a music person, and I also really love Buddy Holly being from Iowa where he, you know, plane crash, all that. Anyway, it's a little Quantum Leap, not greatness, because That'll Be the Day was actually recorded in July of 1956, and this episode supposedly takes place in August of 1956. Mm-hmm. So if this episode is to be believed, Buddy is already recording. Mm-hmm. That said, the records weren't released until a year later.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he actually records Peggy Sue in July of 1957.
Mm.
So, maybe Buddy was, like, playing the bar circuit before, while this is all going on. I mean, I don't know. He could be, like, you know, the guitar guy in Gilmore Girls that just walks around all the time, but
he and the Crickets were already together at this point.
Yeah.
And they were playing, like, bowling alleys and, you know, and weird things like that.
Yeah. Too young for bars.
Well, so, yeah, right, yeah, right.
It's Texas. Who the hell knows?
He was 19.
Yeah. He's, like, still super young.
At this particular point in time.
But I still love it. Still love it. Mm-hmm. Even with that historical knowledge. But yeah, it's great.
Yeah, well, because
I just ruined it for everybody.
Sorry. No, not at all. I think it's a good kiss with history. I don't think, whereas the Watergate one and Star-Crossed, I think we can almost kind of take as like, oh shit, Sam was there.
Right.
Yeah. This one is a little bit more fantasy.
Yes.
Sure. You know, yeah. This one is a little bit more like, you know, okay, look, this, you know, the other thing about it was that Buddy Holly didn't actually write it. The drummer, Jerry Allison was the one that actually wrote it, and it was indeed about a girlfriend of his.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so I think it's a whimsical little moment of Quantum Leap, you know, kiss with history, mm-hmm. and it's nice, and it, because it's been this running thing through the entire episode, it's a beautiful little resolve.
It is.
If any of y'all are out there watching as we go along for the first time and it gets you to go out and check out some Buddy Holly records,
please do.
Then mission accomplished, because you're missing out.
A huge purporter of independence for artists and, you know, independent radio and... you know, we all wish he was still alive today to uphold those ideals because...
Absolutely.
Lords, we need it.
And the things that he was starting to do towards the end of his career, I mean, you know, when we think of Buddy Holly, you think of drums, guitar, bass, the hiccupy voice, the Coke bottle glasses, etc. And then, you know, you get to the end of his career and he's starting to bring in strings and horns and jazz elements. And there's just no telling...
still in his 20s.
There's no telling where he would have gone from there. And, so it's a beautiful little whimsical piece that has no factual basis whatsoever.
Nope.
But I do love.
I love it.
Aside from other kisses with history that the series does, where it's done like a cheap like one off joke in one scene.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is something like the seed is planted the entire
episode. Yes,
and then you get the payoff.
Yeah, and those who were paying attention would have said, "Oh, I knew it the whole time."
At the end.
Which is actually funny because that was what I was just getting ready to say. Is I think an astute viewer would be able to figure out early on. It's like, mm-hmm. wait a minute, is that Buddy Holly? And the beautiful thing about it is I don't feel like the episode plays it for the twist for the audience.
No.
They play it for the twist for Sam.
Yes.
And that's why it feels kind of more rewarding.
Yes.
Because it's like when Sam realizes it, the viewer, for the most part, is like, well, yeah, dude, I knew.
Yeah.
You know, and
when he says his name for the first time, he's like, Buddy.
Buddy, yeah.
Like, he's like, I get it now.
And we get a beautiful piece of what you were talking about earlier, Dennis, with the bumbling version of Sam.
Yeah.
Because the way that he even says Buddy, like, there's that moment where he's just sort of like, all right, I'm gonna do this. I don't know if it's right, but I'm gonna do it. And that's more of the Sam that we get.
Yeah.
Throughout the series. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it's a really great moment, and it's one of the most iconic shots, because the shot is used, the still image,
putting
on the hat, is used again and again and again in the intros and outros.
Well, I even think, like Al may even do like a wave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, yeah, he does.
Time to leap, and so, yeah.
And then, of course, he leaps out, and he leaps in.
Clearly, yeah.
Quite literally. All of a sudden, he's in an attic with a woman who is thanking him for a wonderful time.
Yeah. He was terrific. If I'm lying, I'm dying.
Indeed. And Sam's pants are around his ankles. And that brings us to the close of another episode of Quantum Leap. Mm-hmm. Final thoughts.
I said this before on the last one, but like I said, like, when I was younger, I tended to dismiss these earlier episodes because they're not as high stakes as later episodes. But as I get older and have less of a taste for violent episodes, and a lot of the later episodes turn into, like, Sam, like, saving someone from getting murdered, mm-hmm. so on and so forth. Episodes like this are highly rewatchable for me because it's just fun.
It's light.
It's airy. There are some problematic, you know, misogynistic moments.
Time totally. And place.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, clearly we're going to have to make an edit there.
or not, depending on, yeah.
I would agree with most of what you said. For me, it tends to, I look at it as sort of a fun episode. It does have a good sense of humor, you know, some of the sexist stuff aside. I think it's got a pretty good pace, good clip. Again, kind of going back to what I've been saying about most of this first season episodes, they really do have I think the pace is dialed in really well.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the montage scenes, which we could easily deride, actually help that, you know, it's like sure. it moves action along.
It's yeah. true.
And like I said before, like these early episodes, I feel like they do this great thing of like in the first 5 minutes, they establish the plot of the episode and here we go.
And so in a way I certainly could understand an argument of how they start to feel a little cookie cutter.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that's really changing is the genre. You know, it's like mm-hmm. we're just changing our hats, but it's mm-hmm. still the same story or whatever. But that said, I feel like the episode does well. We're getting to, I think, everyone, Scott Bakula, the writers, the directors, everybody involved, they are getting to know Sam a little bit more
mm-hmm.
As we go on. There's still some things that I feel are kind of still un-Sam-like. I think we can, if we want to chalk it up in our head canon to him being Swiss cheesed and not really knowing who he is even anymore, whatever the case may be. But I do. I think ultimately, the episode holds up pretty well and has a good little yarn, and it's fairly harmless
mm-hmm.
for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's happy in the end.
Yeah.
Final thoughts, Claire?
As someone who hasn't really watched Quantum Leap since the summer between junior and senior year of high school, when they were on sci-fi like six mm-hmm. times a day, I think that was about. that was when I watched the majority of the episodes.
Right.
Coming back to it now, it's awesome. It's a fun episode. Again, feministly problematic, but you know what? Here's this woman that's gonna run the crap out of this ranch, mm-hmm. and she loves her animals, and she hopefully has found a good, solid partner in Wayne, and possibly because she didn't see him in a romantic way until the end, that's going to make their relationship even stronger.
Ooh,
because all of the, you know, friendship and trust, which hopefully will ensue, even though she says she trusts only herself, maybe that, you know, hopefully that's already been established and it'll come and they're going to live a great life running the ranch, and all the animals and that pig in those Western shirts. That's,
you know, what you just said actually made me want to just jump back real quick and talk about Wayne for a second, and the fact that he shows up like he does, he takes the chance, he gives these letters. I feel like one of the things that's interesting is that there doesn't seem to be any demand on his part.
Yeah.
There's no, you're coming with me, I love you more than he does. It's more just sort of like he shows up and he's like, I have this thing to show you, and I came here because I need you, and you know it's
kinda, almost glossed over in the episode. You know, it's almost like, oh, we're gonna tie this up and get to the buddy part, but it's like, oh no, he was.
Yeah.
He was there. Like, he was supporting her the whole time.
Absolutely.
Sometimes in less than good ways, like with cheating the cards and all that. Yeah, sure. Who hasn't cheated at cards? Whatever, sure. You know. But, I mean, oh, sorry. I don't know.
No one played cards with Claire. But yeah, it is an interesting moment, and it shows a lot of heart, and I think that that's one of the things that we get a lot of from Quantum Leap, and we've talked a little bit about, we didn't talk a lot about the last one, I don't think, well maybe we did, I don't know, whatever, who knows what I'm talking about, point is, that there's a lot of heart, there's a lot of heart to these episodes,
there really
and I think that that's something that only continues to grow. So there you have it, How the Test Was Won.
Claire, if people want to find you
online, what do you got to plug?
You can find me by checking out either of my bands, The New Switcheroo or Claire and the Bears. We are all over all the regular social medias, Spotify, SoundCloud, Facebook, Twitter, all those things. So, yeah, listen to some fun music, and please, please, please check out Buddy Holly if you are not already a fan, because there's a lot going on there, and we should know our history.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I think that pretty much wraps up this episode.
Yeah, it sure does. So,
this was so much fun. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you so much for being a part of it.
Thank you. Thanks.
I think it's safe to say that, you know, if you're interested, we would love to have you back in the future. So.
Anytime. And to any of those five people who are listening, thanks so much. And tell your friends.
Five and growing. You five tell another five each.
It's like a pyramid scheme.
We'll sell some exactly. Amway. So until next time, I'm Dennis.
I'm Sam.
I'm Claire.
Let's leap out of here. Yeah.
All right. Have a good day.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed what you've heard or have any questions or comments, don't be shy. Reach out to us online at fwwquantumleappod.com or Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook at Fate's Wide Wheel. And remember to hit the subscribe button and leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you may be listening. Until next time. We'll be right back.